Cam.
Hi, Mike.
Happy Halloween.
Yeah, and you as well. We're almost there, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. By the time this is up and by the time people are listening to this, it will be Halloween, so...
An hour and a half to Halloween.
Halloween, Halloween. An hour and a half to Halloween. Silver Shamrock.
If you haven't been able to tell, this is our Halloween film series retrospective.
And, holy moly, was it ever.
Yes, and it was a hell of a show. It was a long show, but that's kind of what we run into with these retrospectives.
Yeah, with a big franchise such as it is.
Right. So we have some really great guests. The guys from Uncanny Valley Productions have joined us, and they bring their considerable knowledge about the Halloween series. So we hope
not
you...
just as movies, but on a technical level as well.
Yeah, some of the stuff I had no idea about, so it's really cool. Also, as we mentioned before, we have a donate page on our Podomatic account. So if you know you want to help us out with postage, or we pay about $10 a month to host the podcast, anything. We want to get our own equipment, just anything. Anything is great. If not, we're still doing the show, but we would love to have that little extra help.
Makes things a little easier. Also, if you want to go to the search us out on iTunes, you can rate and review us, and that helps us reach more folks.
Which takes no money, so please go and rate and review the show. That could potentially lead to bigger things for us. We're always trying to bring you the biggest, baddest show we can.
Brrr.
Bigger show.
We're always trying to embiggen ourselves.
Yes. So I'm gonna go get shit faced and eat some Halloween candy. How about you, Cam?
Something similar to that.
Right on.
Might be napping, I'm not sure.
Napping through Halloween.
Yes.
So enjoy your Halloween and enjoy the podcast and
bring a parent.
That's right. Watch it. We're reflectors.
Yes.
Later. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to We're Gonna Need a Bigger Show, episode 13. No, wrong movie.
Right.
Tonight's episode is our Halloween retrospective. How fitting for episode 13.
Which is 31 backwards.
Yeah, exactly. See?
Yeah.
You've made this work. tonight is gonna be a lot of fun. As always, I am joined by...
Cameron B. Childs.
Cameron B. Childs. And rejoining us is...
James Mangrum.
Perfect. And new to the show, we have...
Scott Stolfridge.
Now, gentlemen, why don't you... for those who don't know, because I think it's new since the last time you were on.
Yeah, we didn't have a name, but we are Uncanny Valley Productions.
Uncanny Valley Productions.
Our fledgling mass company.
What's funny is there's been times where I've been trying to think of a band or a production company name or whatever, and I've thought Uncanny Valley would make a good one several times. So it's a good name.
But they did it.
Yeah, so if we fall back with the mask making, we can always become a band.
Yeah.
Cowbell.
You want to tell us what you guys are working on currently?
Well, currently we're working on Vacuform masks. We've got a couple retro kind of Ben Cooper sort of Collegeville style things. We got
beautiful
Frankenstein.
Things.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
But we got Frankenstein version. We've got a new just finished Nosferatu style, and we've got a couple more coming out of the pipeline.
Yeah, we got some stuff coming. I guess it might be a little appropriate to maybe hint at what we got coming out as far as.
Oh, is this a bigger show?
Maybe tonight's show being a Halloween show?
I don't know. I would use a hint, but I can't speak English backwards very well.
It's Elmo.
Well, yep, pretty much, exactly.
Let's just say if we've been thinking about coming out with a line of retro masks that are going to be very colorful, like the rest of our masks. So if you can apply that to the Halloween series, maybe you'll put the two and two together.
That's the one. I thought you were talking about a different one. Never mind. Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, that.
Right on.
Yep.
Very cool. Would they be the same kind of vacuum form style?
Oh, yeah, they'd definitely be the same style. They'd be really bright, contrasting colors, same probably size, the depth maybe as our retro style.
The retro ones.
So I recently saw the paint job for the Nosferatu mask. Is that inspired by
Basil Gogos? Yeah.
I mean, it
pretty
looks
much.
So much
like it's a very stripped down kind of Basil Gogos meets kind of like a cartoony version of Nosferatu.
Yeah, I love it. Just the paint alone was just, it's so striking.
Yeah.
That's the main thing that we were looking for too. Like, we do have a lot of detail in the sculpts and we do have a lot of sharp features, but what's really going to make these masks pop is the paint.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
well, I'm going to have to start selling blood to be able to afford all of them. But I will have them. Oh, yes.
Just keep feeding us this fine tap water, and maybe we can work out a deal.
You get treated well when you come to the biggest show.
Right from the faucet.
Right straight from the tap.
Murfreesboro's finest.
Cameron, how you been? I know we don't usually do this, but, you know.
Well, I've been looking at these masks that are sitting. I don't know if we're going to take a picture of them or not.
Oh, we will.
Maybe we should take a picture with them on.
You can.
Can we?
Oh, of course. You can't take a picture of masks just sitting on a table.
I call a pumpkin.
I call Skull.
I guess I'll be a witch.
I call Myers.
Woo! There we go.
Or am I left with Myers?
But our awesome panel this week, Scott has brought along. So this is just Scott's collection, right? You don't collect Halloween, do you?
I don't collect very much at all, honestly.
That Friday collection.
Come on, man. I know you have a really nice Russian doll collection.
I'm waiting for the Russian doll podcast and the Fabergé egg show.
Well,
and that's when I'm really going to bring my collection.
November, so.
Okay, good. Well, then I'm in for that.
November is National Fabergé Egg Month.
In Russia.
Wrong.
Home?
Sound like a dog. It's got on the roof.
But yeah, Scott's brought along some of his collection, and it's beautiful. I can look at them while I talk, which is nice. And he's got the Silver Share Mach 3 and a Part 6 Michael Myers mask, and they are all beautiful. You want to tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, sure. The Halloween 3 set was cast directly off an original Halloween 3 set, you know, from the mid-80s. And the Part 6 mask is actually from a movie mold made by Brad Harden, who worked on the masks for the film. And these are some of my favorites. These are why they stay out of storage. These are my babies.
Well, they're absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
And
thank
they
you
have crickets and snakes coming out.
Yes. Yeah. They will. Too. They will probably tomorrow night after the
big special giveaway. Yeah. Speaking of which, we have our very own giveaway going on right now on Bigger Show costume contest. You have until November 1st, 12:01 a.m. to get in your costume pictures for our costume contest, where you will be entered to win a ton of stuff, including a butt ton of candy, a special Halloween 4 print from Fright Rags, a coffee table edition of the Making of Trick or Treat, and a pretty cool little Michael Myers figure from Funko. So, it's a pretty cool contest. All you have to do is submit a picture. That's it. Get the fuck on it.
Doesn't sound too hard to me.
No, it's easy.
You could probably find a picture of somebody else's costume
and
on the internet.
And just submit it.
Yeah. Submit it, feel like, and just as long as it's a really great costume. Exactly.
I would have. I'm none the wiser, and sixpence none the richer. What? We're gonna take a very short break, and we're not doing news this week because nothing happened this week. That's not exactly true. Plenty of stuff. No, we are.
There's been an X-Men trailer. Go.
Fuck it. Here's where we are going. I'm going to do news from memory.
Okay.
This will be fun.
Memory news.
Memory news. Two trailers came out this week. Fucking Days of Futures Past and Winter Soldier. What do we think?
Days of Future Past for the win.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm really excited about Winter Soldier. To me, I don't know if... I'm not too captivated with the Captain America movies specifically. Like, I'm not Captain-evated.
Thanks for the courtesy, guys.
I might just be more biased towards the Days of Futures Past because I really loved First Class. And I was just telling James right before we walked in. It's funny.
He did.
About how I was excited about
this. Fact. Well, here's the thing. I was a big fan of Days of Futures Past, or First Class, rather. Not a fan of the other X-Men movies. So
I just told James this. That's funny.
Can it's we be true. Best friends now?
We can.
But the thing is, I'm not so excited about this one because it looks like all the other X-Men movies.
Well, Robert Mod said, he was like, I'm not that excited for Wolverine 5.
No, that was Matt Wright, wasn't it?
Somebody said it.
It was Matt Wright. Shout out to both of you for being awesome human beings. But, yeah, it's just, it's one of those things, like Matt said, retire Wolverine for a little while. Mm-hmm. Enough is enough. He yes. just had a movie. And I was not a fan of the first Captain America, but I think setting it in modern day might work.
A little less whip bang zap.
Yeah.
Wow. Right. And the idea, you know, like, that final shot where Winter Soldier catches the shield is pretty iconic stuff. So yeah. That'll be cool. James, do you have any feelings?
I've seen neither of these previews.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Well, this is an instance where we are not playing them on the show.
Okay, cool.
Moving on.
I think the biggest. Oh, announced today, we might as well talk about this. While it's been kind of floating around that Sam Raimi is currently writing Army of Darkness 2, it's been confirmed by Fede Alvarez that he is also that Sam Raimi is also going to direct Army of Darkness 2. But it was also confirmed today that Fede Alvarez will not be returning to direct Evil Dead 2. I'm bummed out about that because I really enjoyed the Evil Dead remake. What did you guys think?
Very much so.
It was all right.
It took me a few times to get as into it as I did. But
right.
It wasn't, like, bad, but I wasn't, you know, like, blown away by it. It was all right.
I think one of the main things it lost was the humor, probably. Like, there was humor, but it wasn't quite as...
It wasn't kitschy.
Yeah.
I was just missing that.
But I was okay with that.
Yeah, I was too.
Because I felt like if they tried to... I feel like the Evil Dead series, when it happened, was in such a time that it worked. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that you could really get away with that same style anymore.
I don't know. I think things that are inspired by Lovecraft lend themselves extremely well to humor. So I think it should have been a lot funnier and a lot more over the top. I mean, I don't need, you know, dark heroine stories in my funny Cthulhu pseudo mythos. Sorry.
Cabin in the woods.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But I am bummed that we'll never see the proposed mashup movie that was going to happen where they crossed universes. That was a big thing that they talked about for a while, and now it doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Wait, what universes?
Like, Fede Alvarez's Evil Dead universe and Sam Raimi's.
Oh, Sam Raimi's would totally win.
It's not a fight, James.
Oh, yeah,
James,
but
it's not a contest.
It is a contest.
Well, I know you're upset about it, Mike, but I noticed that you posted about it earlier today, or yesterday maybe, but how excited are you about Trick or Treat 2?
Woo! The next bit of news, there is going to be a Trick or Treat 2!
The 80s movie with Skippy and the...
And Gene Simmons.
Okay, with Ozzy. Yes. With Ozzy was in it? Yeah, he was in it. Yeah.
Different movie, James. Oh. There's going to be a sequel to the 2007 Trick or Treat with Sam the Pumpkin King.
He's probably the king of the
lover of the chocolate bars.
Yes, I love it's my favorite Halloween time movie, and I think that calm down, James.
This is why Mike and I have to be best friends. It's like very top on my list as well. Like,
Halloween. It did set like the first time I saw it. It came around at the right time for me, and it's really kind of affected. I don't know. I think it did a lot for how I looked at movies afterwards. I've been waiting for this news for a really long time. And I kind of thought, you know, they kept announcing that they were doing this big screening and that it was going to be live on YouTube and there would be a Q&A. And I just kept hoping, let there be some sort of announcement. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, and not only was there an announcement, but there was also that really cool banner.
Yeah.
You know, that was just with the two and everything. Mm-hmm. And just that's enough. I don't need very much right now. But the fact that it's happening... One of the things I've been reading, people are upset. They're like, how do you mess with perfection? Michael Dougherty's doing it. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think you need, it's not like somebody's coming in and messing with his vision.
Yeah.
He's doing it.
It's not like Rob Zombie's remaking it or anything.
So you're saying, like, he's going to be the one to ruin it himself.
You are killing me. We would like to find out tonight, James. It's like you came here with the express purpose to bring me down.
I'm just trying to toughen you up.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's a tough world out there.
This movie
could suck horribly.
Tough love.
There isn't anything else to talk about. I mean, there might be, but I can't think of anything.
We've got way more important things.
We do have more important things to talk about. So, we want to know what you think about all the news. And we're going to take a quick break and come back with our Halloween retrospective.
Oh yeah.
Dee doo doo dee doo doo dee doo.
And we're back for our Halloween retrospective.
I won't do the echo again.
No. It's best that you don't.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited. So let's just jump right into it. Halloween, number one.
The year is
1978.
Let's set the scene.
John Carpenter's kicking around.
It's Halloween.
He's not a big famous person yet, right?
Not really. No, he'd done a few things. And I think it was...
He did Assault on Precinct 13.
Right.
Which had a lot of the...
same cast?
Yeah, influence for Halloween. A lot of the references.
And I think it was Mustafa Akkad who had the idea for the title, wasn't it? That it was just going...
Yeah,
was
it Akkad that had the title?
Well, it was originally The Babysitters. The Babysitter Murders.
Right. Yeah. Wasn't it... That's Erwin Yablonsky.
Oh, it was Yablonsky. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay.
Please
tell me.
Oh, my God. Here we go. Here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. This is going to happen a lot. Okay, because...
Are you sure this is the thing?
James really likes the first movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I just didn't want to, like, think that Mustafa Akkad did something good ever. So I it would ruin my life if I thought that, so...
Holy shit.
What other things has he been involved with outside of the Halloween franchise?
That I cannot answer.
Yes. Mustafa Akkad? Yeah. I don't know, making money off of the Halloween franchise.
Okay. Pretty much. Yeah. Him and his... Yeah, and Malin.
Yeah, I mean...
Wow. Anyway, the film famously stars Jamie Lee Curtis.
A young Jamie Lee Curtis.
Young Jamie Lee
Pre-Activia.
Curtis.
Pre-Activia. Jamie Lee
Curtis. She still was able to poop normally.
Actually, teenage as well. She was the only teenage girl.
She was
on
18,
cast.
Wasn't she? Mm-hmm. Or 19? I guess when you talk about what works, I mean, why is this, you know, here we are, what, 35 years later? And it still works, like this movie.
Yeah, I mean, basically, John Carpenter had a really good idea to make a film. He, like, you know, took a lot of his favorite things from, you know, old Hitchcock films like Psycho and everything, mm-hmm. and applied that, and then ripped off a Black Christmas and made Halloween. It was awesome.
Let's not get on the Black Christmas debate with James. That'll be a whole other retrospective.
So, thank you, Bob Clark.
One of the things that's come out recently is that millennials have been, a lot of people have been polling millennials as to the impact of this movie, and does it still work? James, I would assume that you're cemented in the camp that yes, it still works, and it's still scary. And now I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit, mm-hmm. because I feel like over the years, maybe it's lost a little bit of what's made it scary. Just with everything we've been exposed to as a movie-going audience, I don't necessarily feel... While I grew up with it and I still love it, I don't know that I necessarily feel like the first one works as well as it has in the past. What do you think makes it still work after all this time?
It's actually a reasonably decent film. It started a genre. I mean, it's well shot. It's got good pacing.
Didn't Black Christmas start a genre?
Well, no, it didn't have all of the elements in place. You see, it's a proto-slasher, a lot like Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a proto-slasher. Okay. Halloween's the first true slasher that kind of all the little tumblers fit into lock perfectly, and then everything else, you know, Halloween sequels, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, et cetera, all the way down to like Chucky and Leprechaun, ripped off of all the elements that made it work.
Right on. Okay.
So Halloween is the first true slasher film. So that's a big part of what makes it so good.
Cameron?
See, this is where I'm going to have to... When I watched it, this was maybe 6 months ago. For the first time. Mm. Never... I kind of knew what it was about, whatever. And I mean...
Whatever.
And now he's on a retrospective.
Like a true fucking millennial.
Yeah, I was texting during this entire movie. I was on Facebook.
Funny story, the guy that I took to see it for the... last year I took a friend of mine. I won't say mm-hmm. who, just so he doesn't get death threats. When I took him to see it, he was seeing it for the first time. And yeah, he was on his phone for most of the movie.
Okay, I didn't do that. I was joking.
Yeah, no. I was in complete horror. I was just, what? What? This is Halloween. Like, you can't, you know.
My thought was, okay, this is a classic. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sit respectfully, as I would my grandfather. But the word that kept coming up in my mind was meandering. And I don't... This may start a whole thing, but when I was watching it, I was just like, I felt like I was constantly waiting for something to happen. I felt like those long Steadicam takes were really long,
right?
And that could just say something about me, as you know, in my generation and what I'm used to, and not having seen it as a kid. But at the same time, I felt like it moved.
Too long talking about his generation.
Sorry. Skip. Don't try to put me down. But for real, it did feel...
Cookie woman.
I think that's how it feels in 2013. Kind of slow.
Okay.
So clearly you're a Rob Zombie Halloween.
No.
Let's not get carried away.
Cameron, all about Rob Zombie's Halloween.
I mean, Scott, how do you feel about Halloween?
Yeah, please tell us.
Yeah, open up your ears, children. I like that you're not spoon-fed everything.
Okay.
I like that. I think I like the simplicity of the movie. I think it makes it a bit more realistic, even though it is, you know, a campy late 70s movie. It is... very simply, a guy in a mask chasing after these young girls. No real rhyme or reason. And I just like how simple it is. We're not told everything we have to know about the characters. We just know that Myers is quoted by Loomis as pure evil.
Right.
And I think that's just what makes it scary. And I think that today, it could be in the same realm today. Of course, in moviegoers' eyes, it would have to have a little more action, more gore, just because that's what people have grown to expect. But the original Halloween, a lot like the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, actually had very little visual gore. It was all up to the viewer to make what they wanted out of it.
Well,
and I think that's what's really scary about
sure.
it.
Sure. I think one of the things to take away from it, regardless of how it plays today or then, it's simply iconic. From the way that Myers looks... to the way that the film was shot, you know, the aspect ratio it was shot in, to the score, you know, to the actors, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it created something truly iconic. And a lot of movies from the era did, just because it hadn't really been done before.
Yes,
you know, like
it was a really great time for horror. And,
right.
Yeah,
and going away from gothic horror and going mm-hmm. to things that are a little bit more more modern.
Right.
And entering suburbia. I felt like
this
is where we really got used to the fact of people getting, you know, killed in their bedrooms.
Yeah. And that,
right.
yeah, that this
the killer
was
could exist
one of
in
the first films to kind of take that. And that I think that's when people are arguing about, oh, it's too slowly paced, it's too boring. Well, it's indicative of the time in the 70s in the suburbs where things are kind of slower paced, mm-hmm. where things are kind of relaxed and kind of benign and everything like that. And I think that plays well into the film. And the film itself, the way I look at it, it's not very much like real life, and that's what makes it work as a horror film, is that it slowly seems to descend into a claustrophobic nightmare.
Right.
And the ending of it is so bizarre and unreal mm-hmm. that that's one of the reasons I don't like any of the sequels, because it loses that touch with it. 'Cause,
sure.
I mean, it goes from Michael Myers is... Well, first he's an escaped lunatic, and for whatever reason his doctor thinks he's evil. Why would a man of science think somebody's pure evil? To all of a sudden, like, he can't seem to be killed,
mm-hmm.
to all of a sudden, he's literally everywhere around, like, in
sure.
presence.
Sure.
You know.
Okay. Yeah, and I mean, a lot of that is fair, you know, I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
And to go back to your comment about just the simplicity, there is something to be respected there in that, you know, especially in comparison to the later movies,
mm-hmm.
I don't need an explanation
exactly.
of why Michael is Michael.
Yeah.
Like,
and that's what makes it work so well.
Yep.
So the fact that it's just,
yeah.
you know, simply evil. I mean, that's, you know.
And
yes.
that he could
Loomis
be anybody.
Says.
He is still human in
right.
part one.
Right.
Sort of.
Yeah, as
but
far
yeah.
as.
Well, and I think that, and that's something that we had talked about. You know, he is supposed to be a human being throughout the series. But then you get into, and I don't want to get too far ahead, but then you get into different mythologies, and that's the problem with this series, is that whereas Freddy, pretty much one mythology.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's one kind of story.
And they weren't afraid to be like, oh, he's a zombie now.
In the Friday series.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, then it was...
No, Nightmare on Elm Street, Freddy was never physically there.
What I'm saying is that Michael was supposed to be human, whereas they came out and said Freddy's kind of undead.
Freddy was like a demon, you know, and then Jason is a zombie, you know, at a certain point.
Yeah, as of part six.
Right.
After part four,
he's
dead.
But with Michael, it's always just kind of, it's this, you're just kind of supposed to assume that he's always been a human being. And it gets kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, right.
Know?
Yeah, it is.
And that was, like you were talking about, due to the Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street sagas that went on for so long with these big unstoppable killing machines, Myers had to keep up. He had to stay up there with them.
Right. And that, you know, that comes from a lot of, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen. A lot of times, you know.
Mustafa Khan needs money.
Mustafa Khan needs money.
Yeah,
he wants his money.
You know, I don't know what metaphor there is, but the cook's wanting more money.
Yeah.
The cook's needing more.
And that's why I think it just one film works best is because, like I said, it kind of gets surreal. And
right.
So it kind of blurs the line of, is Michael human? What is he?
Right.
And is this even real by the end of it? So.
But, there, you know, while I don't think that every element still works, again, it's still iconic and it's still... As a horror fan, it's still, like, endlessly watchable.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the best horror films ever made.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, you know, and it's certainly quotable, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's definitely, I find myself, like, a lot of what's said in Halloween comes up a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think when I was watching it, I remember texting you and made an off-color abortion joke when Michael gets taken out by a coat hanger.
Oh, yeah, I recall that.
So there was that. I'm just throwing this in there. It has nothing to do with anything.
That did happen.
Yes.
You know, and it's just, it's one of those things that I feel like if something iconic was made like that today, the immediate reaction might be, don't touch it. Like, leave it alone.
Right.
Don't make a sequel. Just leave it as it is. But we know that that's not true.
Because they made a deal with the devil.
They made the deal, yeah, right? They definitely... one of the things, and again, one of the things I could say over the Halloween series as a whole, whereas it's varying degrees in the other slasher franchises, they ran this one into the ground.
They did.
Oh, yeah.
This one was really, really...
It has not one, but two wannabe hip-hop star actors.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So...
That's
once
where you know you're
yes.
getting into dangerous territory.
I mean, Donald Pleasant's rapping career was really heading somewhere
until he was tragically
yep.
taken out in a gang fight. So.
He couldn't figure out a good rhyme for pure evil, which is pretty much all he wanted to put into a song. So,
His Eyes was his number one hit.
Yeah.
His Eyes,
you've never seen His Eyes.
I smell a sketch.
Oh, yeah.
You don't know what death is, his follow-up.
Yeah, exactly.
And then followed up with, Lonnie, get your ass away from there, away from there, away from there.
And I don't know how to use a gun. Was it part five where he turns on a light switch with the gun?
Yeah.
I'm like, what are you doing? He did not take the gun safety course.
But Donald Pleasance really brings a certain classiness to
Definitely.
All the proceedings. I mean, he
yes.
just... I never, you know, regardless of how he felt about the franchise, which still I think he was, I mean...
Oh, he loved it.
He was pretty favorable.
That's why he returned
part.
To
yeah.
most of the series, because he thought that the movies were really more than probably what they were to most
right.
people. Mm-hmm. He really enjoyed them.
Did you know that originally Christopher Lee was supposed to play?
Yes. Yeah,
that
would have been...
Also Peter Cushing, too.
Yeah, Peter
yeah.
Cushing, yeah. And Christopher Lee, years later, said it was one of the biggest mistakes.
The biggest regrets, yeah.
And then he got to be in Lord of the Rings, and he quickly
oh,
forgot.
Yeah,
yeah right, exactly. but no, you know, Donald Pleasance is, for me, probably the most enjoyable thing about the entire franchise.
Yeah.
Much as I think Michael, you know, is really iconic, Loomis is just as iconic.
Oh, yeah, well, he's
right,
just
yeah.
as important.
Well, when Donald Pleasance plays the character, it's just
right,
as iconic.
Right, right, right.
You know, but... That's another one of those things where you can kind of put any guy in a mask, and you know, if he can walk a certain way, he can be that character. Not everyone can bring, you know, that much.
Yeah. We were scared of Michael Myers in the original Halloween because of Loomis, because of his description.
Exactly, that part is his monologue, which I consider to be like the heart of the entire film, where he's describing, you know, in the Myers house, like the first time he came across a young Michael, and that just kind of set the whole mood for the film perfectly.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and they use it again and again with good reason. I mean, you know, to keep bringing it back. I mean, it's obvious that it's for, you know. I mean, it hadn't
thought of that. Just the fact that, unlike the other franchises, Donald Pleasance brings a gravitas to the series that the other ones just don't have. Because the only consistent thing they have is maybe a survivor and the villain.
Right. Yep. You don't have the Ahab, as it were.
Yes. Like, yep.
You know, and that's one thing. Other franchises have tried it. Other just film series have tried it. And he's really, you know, that was the one time where you can honestly say it worked, and has really not been touched ever since. You guys have anything else to say about Halloween 1 before we move on?
Scott? Anything? You got anything? You want to talk about the mask? Talk about the mask?
Yeah, that's... I know you love your masks. Scott. But that's one thing. I mean, I feel like we need to talk about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess that would be. I mean, Myers is iconic for his white mask.
Right.
But I'm a nerd when it comes to the masks in the series, James. So I'll probably touch on probably the masks on each segment, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
But,
yeah.
Yeah. The original mask was actually up to Tommy Lee Wallace and Deborah Hill to come up with. Tommy Lee Wallace, who worked as an assistant, he helped out on set, and then later went on to work on Halloween 2 and direct Halloween 3.
Right.
But in the original script, I believe it just said that he had a blank face. Like, there wasn't even strictly a mask yet.
Right.
But once they realized they needed this blank, pale, emotionless face, it was up to Tommy and Deborah. They went down into California to this, I think it's called the California Halloween, it's something along those lines.
Sorry.
Basically, California's biggest Halloween store.
Sure.
And they were looking all through the store, and they ended up coming out with two options. They had the famous Captain Kirk mask, the 75 Don Post Captain Kirk, because of its pale, blank face. But they also went with a 1967 Emmett Kelly mask from Don Post.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
And they alluded to that because there was, actually in the script, he had the clown mask and he had the costume, but they just didn't have a adult Myers thing.
Right.
But in the end, they settled with the Kirk mask, and you'll hear.
Thank God.
Oh yes, definitely, definitely. You'll hear a lot of different stories about who came up with the paint, who came up with whom making the masks. But there were three masks made for the film. Tommy Lee Wallace originally cut the eyes bigger because it had really small, squinty pupils. He had spray painted the mask white, and then taken something called Streaks and Tips, which is almost like a black grease kind of paint, which is used a lot on sets to dull down reflective metals or something like that that kind of get in the way of the camera. And he used that to go through that blonde, streaky hair, and that's what he came up with. And they actually approached Don Post Studios before filming and asked them if they would make a few masks for the movie. And Don Post, being so busy at the time, especially, you know, with the Halloween season coming up, they had to turn him down.
Wow.
And that's when they went off and decided to do it themselves. But afterwards, they actually brought the Kirk mask to Don Post Studios and said, hey, we've done this to it, where they had the Myers version. And they asked, could you do a couple of these for us for the movie? We'd be happy to put your name in the credits, Don Post Studios. And a worker at Don Post ended up making a couple more masks for them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the three masks that you'll see throughout the movie, one hero and a couple stunt masks, were one Tommy Lee Wallace, and the rest were Don Post made masks.
And it's another situation, you know, if you look at this installment versus the rest of the series, where they try to do too much, I think, with the masks. And they try to get really out there and overboard. And it ends up, you know, it can. I feel like, just in the shape or whatever it is, you know, there's a few installments where it just fails really.
Well, they don't appear to
know, like, I mean, just
they don't appear to be store bought masks anymore.
Right.
It's not a blank white mask. It's a Myers mask.
Right.
You know, they had these really strong features and these really distinct details, but it's just not a blank white mask anymore. It's almost too stylized.
And I feel like, you know, just to touch on it, I mean, we'll get more into it when we get there. I feel like the most successful deviation is probably part six.
Which I highly agree with.
But we'll get there. So, yeah, I mean, that's great to touch on that, because that is the reason that the franchise, I think, continued, but by and large, that just the iconic character. If it had been an Emmett Kelly mask, I don't know that we would have as many sequels as
we had.
Or
if it had been an actor,
Shave his eyebrows.
Assuming you can keep the same expression while you're stabbing somebody,
right.
I mean, it just wouldn't have worked for very long. So.
After, you know, the success of the first film, they decided, well, hell, let's drive it into the ground. No, they decided, let's make a sequel.
Yep.
And I know that there was a lot of talk about what to do and where to go with it.
Well, I think we should also mention, I think this was in the making of it, just that a lot of people were initially opposed to it.
John Carpenter being
including
one of them.
He didn't want to. He made his film. He said what he had to say. But I think in order to get the money to make it from Akkad, didn't he have to work something out where they would have sequel rights or something like that?
It wasn't even Akkad yet. It was still at Gibbons.
It was still Gibbons.
Yeah,
okay.
Because he made a deal that he would do The Fog for Universal.
Okay.
And he ended
it
up
was
doing
a,
it with
yeah, it was
AMI,
a deal.
I think.
All right.
And so. It caused a big rift, but they ended up getting it worked out. But yeah, he had to sign up for so many other films with Universal. So eventually, he still ended up writing the film with Deborah Hill, if I'm correct.
Yes,
which he got his one and only plot point in writing it.
How's that?
Well, I mean, the only thing he had is a plot point.
Oh,
was
great,
that,
sure.
Was that, you know, Myers and Laurie were siblings.
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel ruins it.
That's interesting. I mean,
that's my personal.
It definitely adds something. I mean, I guess you could say to some people it would expand the mythology, but why do you think it ruins it?
Well, because it gives Myers motivation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Myers,
and I will agree that John Carpenter did.
He
was
didn't
known.
Want it
he was known to say that he that Myers was strictly in the first film. Supposed to be unrelatable, strictly unrelatable.
Yeah, he's not even like a character in the film. That's why they just called him a shape.
For those of you who aren't familiar, the film takes place moments after the closing of the first film, and follows Myers as he tracks down Jamie Lee Curtis's character Laurie to the local hospital where mayhem ensues.
Not very well populated hospital.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about that in a minute, and then it's discovered that he is indeed her brother.
See, I can't make a decision on that either, whether I like it better one way or another, because there's part of me that wants to know what Michael's trying to do.
Sure.
And then there's another part of me that can recognize that it's scarier when you don't know what somebody's trying to do.
Right. But would the franchise have been as... successful? I mean, is he trying to finish his work?
I don't know if there would have been a franchise.
There would not have been
John
Carpenter
right?
or myself would have. No, when he was shot, fell out the window, remember, his body was gone.
And
then all of a sudden you could hear his breathing, they started showing all those interior scenes of the house and everything.
Yeah, let's back up and talk about that. What an incredibly powerful ending. You can't deny that ending still works.
Yeah, you can still hear his breathing, and they're just going to all the different
scenes. And that last
of
pan
film.
Of the Myers house,
yes.
So it just clicks. Yep. It's just perfect.
Part two. Part two is one of my favorite installments.
Yep.
For me, I just like that everything is kind of, and Cameron and I talked about this earlier. I'm not a gore hound. I like gore, but I'm not a gore hound. But I like that. Everything is a little bit
I think
more
it paces a bit
second.
Better. It's
yeah.
It steps it up just a little bit.
Right.
It still has a bit of that, feel from the first movie, but it is a little more suspenseful, a little more entertaining maybe to the general crowd, not necessarily to people like James who just love the original.
Sure.
Sure. The original.
But yeah, it's got
I feel like the idea of Michael Myers being unrelenting is even more in this film than it is in the first film. Because he doesn't stop. I mean, at the end of the film, he's shot in the eyes, you know. He still keeps, you know, he's still swinging. You know, he comes walking through that glass door. I mean, all of that stuff. And I feel like, and this is also one of my favorite portrayals of Michael
from Dick Warlock.
His portrayal of Michael, just as he just had the walk and everything, and just
did he head tilt a whole lot?
I don't think he did.
He did.
Remember,
just before he gets his eyes blown out when Laurie screams Michael at him.
Oh, and he turns, and he does the head tilt.
He momentarily, you know, brings a scalpel down and then brings it back up.
Right, right.
I think the 2 has the best Michael reveal, doesn't it? Where he's in complete darkness. And it was like, I felt like every movie after that was trying to achieve that reveal. He's in complete darkness and, like, steps.
Well it's in that, 1 and 2, actually. Yeah. In the first one, remember, he's in a closet? And then it just kind of fades in that blue, and all of a sudden he comes from behind and kind of slashes Laurie in the shoulder in the first one.
You're referring to the nurse
with the nurse
Dr. Mixter.
The same kind of thing.
The thing is, it's in both movies. Hell if it doesn't work in both.
It definitely does.
It still plays out just as well. Mm-hmm. Whereas...
Well, it gives him a trademark, too, kind of.
Right.
It starts building up the style of his
killing. I feel like they try to redo that with Halloween H2 on Halloween Resurrection, where he lowers himself from the rafters by one hand, which they end up doing again in Halloween Resurrection.
I thought in Resurrection, it's like, it's a terrible angle when they do it to you. They're just like, oh, let's do that. It was in the other movie.
Whereas this one, you could say it was so effortless and just flawless. Mm-hmm. I was tired of looking at that.
If you want me to leave, you can just say
Scott, can I talk to you outside? I feel like the second one, the things that are added, aside from this is her brother, just the additional gore, the pacing is a little more frantic. It really does it for me, you know, and I feel like it's one of the most powerful sequels. And, you know, I love the ending. I mean, I just feel like what should have been the finality.
Definitely. It should have been closure,
right.
Michael Myers gets blown up.
Yeah.
Well, when you see 3, I mean, they considered the story to be over.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think Jamie Lee Curtis is not given enough to do in the second one. She's not in it, really.
The original plot, I guess, it was actually supposed to be a high-rise apartment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it in the really, really, like, rough editing.
Sure.
It was supposed to be, taken so much later after the first film and follow Laurie trying to get over what had happened in a high-rise apartment. So you still basically got a lot of that same large atmosphere, empty rooms, like a big high-rise apartment or hotel kind of might be.
Yeah, you could definitely see that working with the story that.
But
they
I definitely think that the hospital worked much better.
Oh, absolutely.
Just that direct link, same with, you know, Friday, like how the Friday 13th do,
right?
A lot of times, how the same night, and I think it's a good transition. It doesn't stretch too far out of possibility.
Yeah, whereas you know, some of the other ones definitely do take a reach. This one is plausible. You know, I mean, he's shot up, but it's still kind of, well, he's angry. You know, I mean, he can still be going.
I mean, Loomis was pretty sure that he shot him 6 times.
Yes.
Right.
6 times.
Shot him 6 times!
In the heart!
He shot him in the heart, and he is not a man.
Right.
Okay? He was pretty adamant about that.
Well, he's seen his eyes. To his credit, he has seen his eyes.
The blackest eyes.
And he ate rats, because we all know that no human has ever eaten a rat before.
Right.
It
might have been a dog.
It must have come hungry. How silly. I think one of the most tragic things happens in this film to poor Ben Tramer. Poor Ben Tramer just walking around.
Those damn combustible vans.
A drunk 18-year-old trick-or-treating.
Yes, and he gets hit by a fucking...
I was like, what are you talking about?
The innocent kid who gets fucking hit and then nothing happens.
Yes,
like,
right.
The poor guy, like, no one is... left to take the blame for that at all.
We have a return to highly combustible vehicles in 3, which I
don't
want to discuss.
No. I think in every single...
Part 2 is by far my favorite highly combustible part of the entire series. Just because, I mean, cop clearly not looking, nail 17-year-old, probably broke his legs, he probably would have survived, but the van has to explode along with the car. So he's dead.
Exploded. The body exploded. The car and the van exploded. It's
funny.
Is it him? Is it him? And then it's like, and then it's Bracket, your daughter's dead. And then everybody just leaves.
Oh my God.
My girlfriend and I were actually talking about this a couple nights ago while watching Halloween. Ben Tramer is another reference from the first movie.
Yeah.
She was supposed to go on a date with her, or Annie was supposed to be setting it up for
Lori.
And she had promised her that if she watched Lindsay, that she would call Ben Tramer the next morning and tell him that it was all a joke, that Lori wasn't really interested. And it's funny that, not necessarily funny, but that both of them end up dying, so Lori was off the hook. Like, can you imagine her being in the hospital after everything that went on, still wondering if Ben Tramer was... Ben Tramer knew about her crush.
Here's the twist. Lori plotted it all.
Yeah, it was all... Nobody must know about my Ben Tramer crush. He will die. Annie will die.
And in a high-anxiety type twist...
Right.
Lori is
Michael. Right, exactly. But Lewis again, you know, there's a lot that really works in the sequel. I think the only things that really don't work, maybe some of the hospital employees.
Oh,
I mean, they're
Nurse Jill.
Yeah, they're just kind of just stupid, like really silly stuff.
Again, it's also the lack of hotel employees. There just seems to be four people in the hospital,
right,
or something.
The entire time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
yep.
just like, wait, what? How is this even possible?
Like half-assed Halloween decorating. Like, someone was like, I gotta fucking
wear it. They're also very, like, energy, like, reclusive as well. Like,
right.
There are no lights on in this
yeah.
entire hospital.
Yeah, they're trying to save some power.
No patients except for Lori. Well, then
yeah.
and there was briefly that kid with the razor blade in his mouth, but they just
yeah.
didn't have time to see him.
Right.
Which, by the way... There's never been an actual incident of razor blade candy
exactly.
actually taking place. Just, you know, FYI.
For
I think that film helped perpetuate that.
Well, it happened in Halloween, too.
Yeah,
it happened
in Halloween,
they really
too.
Made that
but yeah,
kid
they had
bite
to turn that
apple.
Kid away because they didn't have time because they had their one patient, Lori, you know.
Get her one room.
Mildly fractured.
I'll say, though, even
stabbing.
Excusing the rest of the movie, as a kid, that image always stuck out to me. That poor kid
yeah,
with the
razor
blood.
Blade, yeah.
And you can you can see the blades in his mouth. It just always stuck out, like... Forget Myers, like that's what's scary.
Right,
that
right.
that ugh.
This was actually looking back. This was the first Halloween I saw, and I didn't see the whole thing. I just saw an image of him. I think it may have been lifting the nurse mm-hmm. on the scalpel. and very shortly after
totally
that, I
legit.
Went. Yeah, and shortly after that, I went to my first haunted house where there was a Michael Myers. So
oh,
imagine
Lord.
My
yeah.
petrification.
Much to
that.
Your chagrin.
Right. Yeah. John O'Hurley is joining the podcast. So yeah, part two, man. I like it. We're still okay. We're still on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's talk a little bit about the mask in part two.
Oh well, really simple. It's the exact same mask from the first movie.
Right.
Deborah Hill kept it in a shoebox or
wow.
yeah under her bed for a couple years.
See, I didn't know that. I really thought that they had done a separate mask because to me, it's always looked a little.
It does
different,
look different mainly because they
it's
did.
Been in a shoebox.
Yeah, well, it's been in a shoebox, yeah, for a long time.
Naturally.
They also spray painted the mask, and any kind of oil, paint, and latex will kind of discolor it, rot
okay.
it a little bit. But yeah, like in between takes in the original Halloween, Nick Castle would just crumple it up, put it in his pocket. But yeah, it just basically sat in a shoebox for a couple
wow.
years. And you'll hear for a lot of the like Halloween and the mask hobby nerds, you'll hear like the Castle stretch and the Warlock stretch. And what they're referring to is in the first movie, we got Nick Castle, who has a really longer head, I
right.
guess. And you'll
Warlock
see,
has a smaller,
yeah,
squatter.
You'll actually see in the movie, you'll see the eyes droop a little bit and the mouth almost open in a lot of scenes in the Halloween, especially during the phone call scene after
right.
he picks up the phone and Lori's on the other end. And you get to Halloween 2 where Dick Warlock, who has this just kind of massive melon
right.
head, you'll actually see a physical change in the mask because it's being pulled so tight.
Sure.
Huh.
But I think, again, that's just two iconic different
yeah,
looks
it's
of
like,
the mask.
Yeah, it's shorter but wider,
mm-hmm.
you know, yeah. Right, all right. Really, really cool. You know, just those are just little things, but it kind of changes, you know, the way that the character
mm-hmm.
is.
Definitely.
And, you know, I think Dick Warlock really realized what he was playing.
Oh, yeah.
And knew that he had to kind of...
And can we talk about how he changes a little bit from Nick Castle's portrayal?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Well, basically, you know, as we know about Nick Castle, he was the son of, like, a dance choreographer and things like that, so
mm-hmm.
he had a very kind of, like, fluid kind of walk,
coming
posture,
down the staircase.
Like that. It was just
very,
very kind of fluid.
Light.
light movement, yeah, and but worked really well. There was also something almost kind of ethereal about the way he moved.
Right.
Dick Warlock's portrayal is based very heavily off of the scene where he kind of sits up towards the end, that almost
robotic
kind of movement. So he's very stiff and rigid in the way he kind of moves.
And he had never seen it previous. He had never seen the original Halloween either.
Okay. Yeah.
He had just basically heard that Myers was almost an unstoppable at this point.
And that was kind of the way that he played it.
It's just what happens when you fall out of
order. You get a little creaky. Yeah. Naturally, you've been shot 6 times.
You gain great
shot
posture.
Shot in the heart.
So
we need a soundboard.
Yeah, a Bluma soundboard.
6 times. Shot him 6 times.
In the blackest eyes. You know, famously, though, Deborah Hill hates Warlock's portrayal.
Yeah,
I always thought that was really interesting.
What a name, Dick Warlock.
I know.
Yep, that's clearly a stage. Yeah, it's a stage name, but
right.
Yeah, it's a very nice name though for the horror.
Sure, sure.
Dick Warlock.
So moving on to Halloween 3. James, you just saw Halloween 3 for the first time.
You want mine?
Give us your overview.
Was it really the first time?
No, it wasn't the first. I saw it recently.
Well, do we need to go over graze the origin of it
before we talk about that?
Well, our opinions of it. Yeah.
Sure.
And now we're leaving to
Scott
because of his tattoos.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, Scott, you have several Halloween.
You've been elected the.
I'm having the strangest feeling of deja vu.
I know this
guy.
Well, ashy skin, got these colorful tattoos here. But Halloween 3. Halloween 2 was over. It was done.
Dunskies.
Yeah. And no, so they more needed Myers. To make a follow up.
Blown to bits.
Yep.
He exploded.
And Tommy Lee Wallace wanted to create this film and direct this film called Season of the Witch, which was basically what we got on screen throughout the entire movie. But the greedy producers did not want Season of the Witch to happen. They wanted Halloween 3 Season of the Witch to happen. They did not. They really wanted to grasp that Halloween title.
Power of the first.
Well, and
yeah.
I think also right away it was in trouble. It went through several drafts.
Yeah,
there was
many drafts.
John Carpenter did a draft. Mm-hmm. Tommy Lee Wallace did a draft. Then the guy who wrote the Quatermass novels also did a draft. So,
and there are many different versions you'll see that pop around, and then basically we landed on the screenplay that Tommy Lee Wallace worked on, and and
I think even Faulkner did a draft.
Peter?
William.
Oh.
Faulkner.
Damn it, Faulkner.
So really kind of a hard time coming to the screen. Nobody really wanted to call it Halloween.
Mm-mm. They wanted to push it kind of like a creep show. Series.
Sure.
They wanted to have almost, after two, they wanted to create almost a different Halloween-themed movie every year or two with a different Halloween-themed killer, and they thought this was the perfect opportunity to create a successful Halloween franchise,
yep.
And it just didn't get the response that it deserved, in my opinion.
And see, and I was talking to you guys about this earlier, at Mike's advice, I watched the making of before the movie itself.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think I said, I don't know if I'll have time to watch this one. And you're like, well, at least catch the making of.
Right.
I watched the making of, and I was like, I want to see this movie.
Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of knew what the plot was at that point. But when they were saying that, yeah, we wanted to create, or we thought it might be a cool idea just to do Halloween stories, I was like, that's kind of a neat idea, really. I mean, if it had worked, it would have been really cool.
Which, back to what we were talking about earlier, about Trick or Treat.
Right.
Sorry about that, which is why I think it's so successful for
gotcha.
Exactly the reason that you said,
right.
Cameron.
But yeah, the plot of Halloween 3, which is my favorite part, it's basically that the Irish want our children dead.
Which
I've
suspected
all
along.
Yeah, and they're using Stonehenge to pull off their elaborate
the
scheme.
Irish want to create robotic police officers.
Right, yeah, and they're using, yes, the Irish are using robots made by Irish toy makers to use Stonehenge to kill all of our children.
They had to go to the British Isles, or they had to go to Britain to get to Stone. It just seems like a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm. How they smuggled the stone away.
I know, and I was expecting him to tell me, and I'm like, oh, come on, Connell.
Connell Cochran. I don't know why he's a southern gentleman.
I kind of like it, though.
Well, that's how he's in the sequel. that we've written, or that Todd Rompus has written.
Todd Rompus, yes.
So here's the thing: I love Season of the Witch. I am an unapologetic Season of the Witch fan.
It's okay.
First and foremost, Tom motherfucking Atkins in this.
Stop
movie.
It!
Stop it!
Yes.
The fact that he just leaves his wife and children to go on the road.
Ultimate mustached player.
With a six pack.
Yes, he's like,
I hops in a car.
Whatever was the
I got a doctor like, conference.
Whatever, yeah, exactly. Whatever was the equivalent of Miller High Life in the
80s? Oh, no, it was Miller High Life. That's what he had.
Oh, really?
Yes, he had
High Life. Okay, I didn't know that was a thing.
This beautiful beer that I'm currently indulging upon is the thing that I blame Tom Atkins for the reason I love beer. And I blame Tom Atkins for wanting to grow a mustache and everything else awesome in life.
And for treating women like objects.
Yes. Atkins is a... That's a really stupid question. And then he bones this 12-year-old woman.
Yeah, essentially.
Right after her daddy died, too.
Right.
So it's like, hey. I've also Tom Atkins is the man. Anytime you're tired of watching something, you do go, stop it! Stop it! Turn it off!
I do do that. And I immediately grow this fabulous mustache.
Yes, it goes away immediately.
Here's the thing. Everything he does in that movie is brilliant. I've never seen him in anything where he acts like he's slumming it. Tom Atkins gives 110% in everything. Even when he's got little creepy alien worms trying to crawl his head. And he's playing a suicidal police detective.
Mm-hmm.
Or even when he's with Nick Cage in shitty movies. Or
He was in Drive Angry?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah.
Or when he's being attacked by a psychotic minor.
My bloody Valentine.
Tom Atkins is always the man. Done with Tom Atkins rant currently.
So that was Halloween 3, guys.
That's all we need to talk about. No, come on. Here's the thing. Most of that movie works. Mm-hmm.
And then silence.
No, just joking.
And then the last 20 minutes is kind of bonkers.
Yeah.
But
it's a very sadistic movie too. Like, we don't really think about it because of how quirky it is. But this old man wants all of these kids dead. He wants their head to turn into a microwave. It's
right.
So horrible.
Yeah. But a microwave.
It's the best Halloween prank of all.
Well, that was really good.
Yeah, he's like the best joke of all, and it's on the children.
It's all on
the final processing.
Oh my it's just gosh. Like
Samhain.
Samhain. The festival, the feast of the dead.
And the oldest
children head explode.
Turn into crickets. Why crickets?
Look at this mechanical woman I made who knits and you yell at her.
There's so many things, it's like, what just happened?
That's from that moment to the end of the movie that things go bonkers.
But not in a bad way, though.
No, in the best, like, crazy, just, like, psychotic. I don't know what's going on, but I love every minute of it. Yeah.
I got so much joy out of this movie. Probably more than the other Halloween movies. I mean, it's totally different, so it's hard to even compare them. But it just made me happy.
You're
one of the audiences who should have gotten the movie when it was released then. Because if more people took it the way you did,
right.
Then maybe we wouldn't have seen Myers.
Yeah, exactly.
We might not
He's
have gotten
on the TV
a
at a certain point.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, how many times does Dick Warlock spew applesauce in this movie?
Seth. Orange juice.
Is it orange?
Oh, yeah,
wow.
It's orange
it
puree.
Concentrate?
Yeah. It's just a really thick orange juice.
Why is there
blood? They might have mixed it with something, but I remember.
Why is there blood honey?
Yeah, why is there blood? I want to dip chicken into these robot people. And also when Dr. Dan punches through the
Down Chalice is super punch. Yeah.
He was like, they're completely unstoppable unless you punch them in the stomach.
Can we also
unless
talk
Atkins
about
punches him in the
what
stomach.
A cool name, that Dan Chalice?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Dan Chalice. Perfect. Dr. Dan Cup.
Dr. Dan Fancy Cup.
So, the one thing I hate about this movie is the fact that Annie becomes a robot for no reason at all.
Or is it Ellie?
Yeah.
Ellie.
Well, actually, isn't Annie the ex-wife in the movie?
Okay.
I think
maybe
she
that's
is
what it
from
is.
The first one. She's in it. It has to be her.
From that's her.
That's what I thought.
So, the fact that she just becomes a robot, which I guess it makes sense that they're separated at one point, mm-hmm. and that she, like, he could have switched her out for a robot. But why? Like, there's not a whole lot of reason for that to have happened.
I don't know.
It's just one of those things that I... Are you okay? And turns, and then she wants to twist his face off.
Yeah, it's like 10 minutes later. Are you okay? Yeah, and the...
And then we get the most annoying road trippers ever that are going to the factory and little buddy. And
that's how you won't feel bad when the child, when they all die.
Yeah. Little buddy.
They were annoying anyway.
Yeah. Yep. When the masked woman's lips are split away from her face.
Yep.
Huh. Oh, yeah. Sometimes if you screw around with the little badge on the back of a Halloween mask, it's going to shoot a laser into your face.
Just poke things with tweezers and needles.
Because it has the power of the Celtic gods. That's what is happening. It's a crazy little movie, but it is nowhere near a bad movie.
Oh, yeah.
That's the thing that I want to stress about this. Yes. It gets
it's the Halloween title.
All it is. That it gets such a bad shake. Mm-hmm. I saw it for the first time. And this is not a movie I grew up with. I actually grew up hating this movie strictly because I had always heard no Michael Myers in it. Right. And then I finally saw it and I was like, this movie's fucking great.
I remember the first time I watched it waiting for Myers to show up.
Right.
Because I'd always heard from these people who had seen it that Myers did show up at one point, mm-hmm. clearly talking about the commercial. But I remember putting it in, thinking, wow, this is a really long time for Myers not to show up.
Right.
And hated it for years. And then finally just learned to appreciate it for what it was.
It's a big argument for just the fact that expectations mean everything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you're expecting something and you don't get it, and it's not played to in a clever way or something like that, then you're going to make people mad.
Right. So, I mean, there's really not a whole lot more to talk about with, Halloween 3. Although, again, we should touch on the masks because, you know, if you're going to talk about Halloween 3, that is the most iconic thing about the...
And it's also one of the few things that tie it in with the rest of the series.
Right,
and the masks are such a big part of it.
Right.
From what I've learned is that basically I believe it was the skull and the witch are actually original Don Post masks.
Okay.
They were created before the film was actually released, and then they were acquired into mass production for the movie. And that's kind of what made them so popular. And from what I've read is that the pumpkin was actually specifically made for the film and then was put into production afterwards.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, these crazy, awesome, bright masks.
They look so good. Immediately after seeing the movie for the first time, I looked them up to see, like, can I get these?
Mm-hmm.
How hard is this to get? Because I wanted a set, you know?
Definitely.
I mean, you see them, and it's like, I have to have those masks.
It's really hard to come across original copies, too, like,
right.
from the, you know, 70s.
And right.
It's really hard, but recently, Don Post Productions actually re-released them for a very limited time. I don't know if you can still get them now, but, you can actually get probably your hands on a full set for pretty cheap, comparably to the original masks.
Anybody else make a set right now?
Actually, yes. A good friend of mine, Justin Mabry at Trick or Treat Studios.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, he just he's actually been producing a lot of nice mass-produced masks here recently from popular movies. The Halloween, he did a really nice Halloween 2 mask. He's done They Live, he's done a Darkman, Hellboy. Lots of crazy, awesome characters that are finally getting the kind of the retro-style attention that they deserve. And they've recently required the Halloween 3 set from Don Post Studios, so they're going to be producing those probably next year.
That's fantastic.
That's really good news, yeah. And they're going to have just as much detail as the originals did, because they appreciate it.
You can tell. I mean, you can tell that he puts, you know, the time and the detail into those masks, and they look incredible.
Yeah.
It looks like I'll be getting a set.
Oh, yeah.
For the first time. Well, that's great. Again, like you said, Cam, I mean, the masks really tie it all together.
The only element.
The only element. And then, you know, of course, they buckle with part 4 and decide they're going to bring Michael Myers back.
With very little research to the originals.
Right.
Very little.
And this is where we get into 4, 5, and 6 become the trilogy of films that time forgets in terms of where the franchise eventually goes. They're not... depending on who you ask, they're not really considered canon. they just kind of exist in their own little vacuum. 4, 5, and 6, you know, it's 4 and 5 especially. There's a little more to say about 4, but I feel like 5 is kind of a retread of the same, essentially the same mm-hmm. movie. But 4 introduces a new character in Laurie Strode's daughter, Jamie Lloyd.
Who originally was actually supposed to have been Christina, it's supposed to be Melissa Joan Hart.
Really?
She auditioned for the role, got turned down. Wow. Yeah, so we could have seen Clarissa getting chased by...
by Michael Myers. Wow.
I would like to think that would have meant there would have been no Melissa and Joey. I don't know.
Could have saved and ruined the series at the same time.
Yeah.
But this also brings back Dr. Loomis, who explains that he was able to jump away from the explosion and suffer minor
and has a scar on his cheek that changes every scene.
Yes, it's never the same. And on the back of his hand.
Yep.
It's never the same. And that Michael Myers was whisked away to a maximum security hospital where he's been lingering in the basement hooked up to machinery for 20 years.
As you do.
Here's the thing right off the bat. That doesn't make any fucking sense at all.
Well, this
and welcome to where the movies stop making sense.
I was about to say this in terms of like bridging one movie from the previous. This one probably makes the most sense out of any of them because they get more and more out there, in my opinion. Especially I think the biggest
bridge.
The one that's reach. Most guilty is. H2O to Resurrection.
Yeah,
that's completely
absolutely.
Insane.
Yeah.
But this is where it starts to get crazy.
This is where we get a little kooky, because Michael, as they're transporting him to another hospital, wakes up, fully bandaged, and wrecks a fucking... And this is where we get into super gore. Like, this is where they just get gory for the sake... But it was indicative of the time. And they just start getting gory for the sake of being gory. He wrecks this fucking ambulance, and decides...
By putting a thumb through paramedic's
forehead. No bone there. The guy just had a jelly bean head.
Yep. Wasn't Beekler really proud of that?
Yeah, Beekler was really proud of that scene. Because actually, it's funny you mentioned the gore. The original shoot was actually very traditional to the first Halloween. There was actually very little gore.
And they called for more.
For more gore. That's when Beekler came in and added a few scenes, like the thumb through the forehead, the thumb through the cheek. Myers just really liked thumbs.
Yeah. He likes just head crushing of any kind.
Putting
really.
His hands into people's heads.
Thumb wrestling champ of 1978.
Yeah.
So we get gory, and then we're introduced, you know, to...
We get Laurie, we get gory. I don't know what I'm doing here.
I don't understand.
Gory, meaning allegory. Allegory of the cave.
Oh, God.
What are other words that rhyme with Corey?
We have gone off the rails. It was bound to happen.
It was Season of the Witch that did it, I guess.
We
find out, most importantly, the root of all evil, clown suits.
Clown suits are the root
creepy
of all
uncles.
Evil.
Creepy uncles will do it too.
But clown suits.
This is what both young Michael and what's her name?
Jamie
have in common.
Clown suits.
They make a big deal of her touching his hand. Pretty sure it's the clown suit.
Right. So Michael comes back, wackiness ensues.
No way.
What can we say about this movie that hasn't already been said about the war in Iraq?
What?
Bombed out.
Oh,
depleted.
Oh, I got it.
I'm just saying, bombed out, depleted. This movie just isn't very good. I don't think it's good.
I enjoyed it the most out of between 4 and 5.
I agree. I think that 4 is better than 5.
Oh, absolutely.
And although I do love 6, as far as the Myers character goes, it's probably a better Halloween movie than 6 just because it's not diving so deeply into the Thorn aspect. But again, I love Halloween 6. But I just think it's kind of going back to basics with simplicity, I guess. I mean, I know they haven't introduced Thorn yet, but he's still just this unstoppable machine that's just coming after this little girl and is not going
to
stop.
He gets shot to shit and really just torn up in this movie.
And George P. Wilbur also creates this huge... Tom Tucker.
Yeah. I'm glad you know that.
Oh, yeah. I saw that, I think, when it debuted right. and was so excited because you never see Halloween or like really popular horror movies like that, specific
right.
horror movies like that, especially George P. Wilbur cameos.
Reference yeah. that, yeah. yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we get a huge Myers, which was basically due to the fact that we had, you know, Kane Hodder as Jason, and
right.
we have you know, Bill Johnson as Leatherface. We had these huge killers, so now we assume that George Wilbur has to be huge. And another fun fact is they actually put him into hockey pads or lacrosse pads, actually.
Oh, wow.
For the movie. Yeah, to bulk him up even more, which is completely ridiculous because now you don't probably think about it. But when you go back and watch Halloween 4, now that you know he's in hockey pads, you can't unsee it.
Sure.
Because he's got this pretty thin, fit body. And then you see these two, like, melons on top of his shoulders when he walks.
This is where they start to make Loomis psychotic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where he says some pretty crazy things in the two movies that he's in previously, now he's putting himself and others in mortal danger by the things that he does and the things that he says. And there's this really strange Dr. Loomis road trip, like, through
and we'll gather at the river. You're a pilgrim, ain't you?
You've been hunting the devil, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, that part.
I
yeah.
had myself for years. Came close to catching him, too. Where he just, yeah, he finds Michael at a gas station.
I really think, like, when he got into that vehicle with that crazy guy, they should have just continued the film from there.
The Adventures of Loomis and yeah. Crazy Guy.
And Crazy
Guy. And whenever, like, the really tired Halloween plot got really slow, they could just cut back to, like, Crazy Road Trip. I think that would have been a lot more fun with, like, crazy songs and stuff.
Or the Crazy Reverend should have joined Loomis in his hut for the man-devil, Michael Myers.
Yep.
Why did that not happen?
Well, I've heard that he's pure evil.
I heard that he had the blackest eyes.
Yes, it's a rumor.
So, I don't know, man. Part four.
As slashers go, I think it's pretty strong. But as a Halloween film, it's definitely the beginning of the decline.
I don't hate the movie. I just don't like the movie. Like, it's just if somebody's like, "Oh, you want to watch one of the Halloweens?"
Yeah.
I'm never going to say part four or part five.
Really random, but past couple nights. As we were talking about earlier, I'm the kind of guy that when I go to sleep, I gotta have Omnia. It's gotta have some kind of like something going on in the background to kind of put me to sleep. I was watching The Sandlot a couple nights ago.
Right.
Vincent Drugstore in The Sandlot, exact same Vincent Drugstore from Halloween 4. Yeah, I see it and I go, that is familiar for some reason. And then it hit me, Vincent's Drugstore, Halloween 4, the exact same location. Pretty funny.
Maybe we need to do a Sandlot.
Oh yeah,
we need to do a Sandlot episode. Maybe.
Where we watch the terrible sequel as well.
No. I don't think so.
No, we got them. We can get them on the show. Because none of them are doing anything.
Hey, wait, are we going to do a Land Before Time retrospective?
Please, all 52 Land Before Time.
Yes.
So I think
Sarah's a bitch, am I right?
So, the mask, do you have any mask info for us?
This is a good little bit of trivia, but before, how I mentioned that they did no research for this film whatsoever,
right.
As far as the Myers and the Halloween story went from the first couple films. They filmed the entire movie, and I'm talking the entire movie, with a Kirk mask that was not converted into a Myers mask. All they had heard was that there was a Captain Kirk mask used for the movie.
How?
Wow.
So they had a skin tone mask, bright blonde hair, and you can actually see this if you go back. I know you don't like Halloween 4, but if you go back just for this,
I'll do this.
The scene in the school,
uh-huh,
where Myers is going after Jamie and he gets sprayed
with the fire extinguisher.
Right before he gets sprayed, he bumps into Loomis and throws him out the window.
You see
bright blonde hair, mm-hmm, and the skin tone mask.
Wow.
So they had to go back and do complete reshoots.
Holy shit. Once they realize,
wait, something's not right here. I think something's... So, yeah, they basically...
Have any of us seen the movie? No, I don't think we have seen the
movie.
Not
a single person on that production.
Mm-hmm.
What about... How was Donald Pleasance not guys, this isn't right.
Yeah, this mask seems like...
Shut up, thespian.
Diluted evil.
But
it does not seem the pure evil.
Pure evil
what
I'm used to. Pure uncut evil.
After they realized the mistake, they went back, and it's still debated till this day, more mask nerd stuff, that they either recasted the 75 Kirk mask to make another, and that's why if you see production stills or even
maybe behind the scenes photos, you'll see that the Halloween 4 mask is very shitty.
Right.
It's a horrible mask. It's thick. It's got webbing all over it. It's just a really badly cast mask. It actually goes down pretty far to his neck where the collar comes up, and you'll see bits of latex peeling off. But it was either a recast directly off of the 75 Kirk mask they had, or at the time, because this came out, and Halloween 4 came out in 88, I think it was?
Yeah.
Yeah. By that time, 1985, Don Post produced the mask, which was the Myers kind of knockoff, their version of it. But at this time, they could have easily recasted the mask.
Sure.
So, yeah. But basically, they made a huge fuck up. Man.
Wow.
Do your research, people.
Yeah.
Right.
Come on.
I mean, it's even on the cover of the movie.
Right.
They had the white mask. I mean, how do you not know these things?
Holy shit. Incredible. Well, what a fuck up. Good job. Dickheads and Company.